Hello, everyone. Welcome to minute 123 of season 7 of Movie Run Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today to finish off his stint of this long weekend is Josh Horowitz of 5 Minutes of Trouble and 5 Minutes of Banzai. Welcome back
Hello.
To the show.
Thanks for having me back.
Appreciate
it's been a fun week.
Yeah, it's fun weekend. We're doing the weekend.
Weekend.
Of
yes,
course.
Of course.
So yes, it's been a lot of fun. So let's keep going with that. So minute 123 begins with the credit of Larry Brigman and ends with the credit of the actor playing Felix Literal, John Venuman. So. We ended yesterday with we started with the cast credits and we're gonna continue with some more cast credits here, you know, with the name only cast credits.
Yes, though I can sure. I can talk about stuff that isn't credits here. I can talk about Michael Kamen's tense credits music. I don't know how much you've been talking.
We've talked about him in all three
Michael
seasons
Kamen.
Of done Die Hard, but feel free. What have you got to say about Michael?
So the interesting thing about Michael Kamen, from what I was reading, is that he wasn't the only film composer to have music, at least in the first Die Hard. And this was interesting to me that I guess the ending sequence that here in Die Hard 1, where he falls out the window and all that was based on unused temp music that James Horner had done for Aliens. And I guess the director had really liked the temp track and kind of threw out Michael Kamen's music and asked Horner to use his. And so that's what we see in the film. But it didn't stop Kamen from coming back and doing all this other music. And yeah, it's stuff. I don't think Kamen's still alive. I think he passed away a couple of years ago.
No, he passed away not long after. I think he passed away like in 2000 or 2003 or something like that.
But he's had some
films. I've always loved his stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've loved what he did for From the Earth to the Moon.
Exactly. That was what I was going to mention.
And I think I think he did Vanda Brothers also.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, no.
I love those
good
pieces.
Sort of classic orchestration in the style of the typical Hollywood films. You know, he's very much in the same vein as a John Williams. And it seems very appropriate
for
this movie, just action packed and tense where it needs to be. And kudos to Michael Kamen.
The music in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Shout out to a friend of the show, Travis Bowe, who is still in pre-production and will hopefully be releasing shortly his Minute of Thieves. I'm sure he will talk very much about Michael Kamen there.
What were you saying? The movie Prince of Thieves, or the original name, that other one in the first episode?
That was The Town. But that's not the same one.
Yes.
We're talking about two different. we're talking about two
other
different
Prince
movies.
Of Thieves. Yeah,
that's right. So we continue with the actors here, and so we get Larry Brigman, and then after that we get Anthony Peck. And so Larry Brigman plays the police captain who, he's known as Inspector Cobb, but in the movie they call him Walter, but in the credits his name is Arthur. So it's I always find that really funny that they just got the name wrong at some point in the script. He's also known as Arthur. So in the movie they keep calling him Walter, and here he's Arthur, and in the script he's also known as Arthur. So somewhere they messed up, because here in the credits he's listed as Arthur. Maybe Walter is some form of Arthur. I don't know.
And I wonder if it's something in their contract too where they specify, we need to have a credit before the main credit roll. And if they get more money because of that.
It's very possible. And then, so I mentioned we have Anthony Beck, who plays, he's been in a lot of McTiernan movies. He unfortunately passed away not long after they made this movie. In this movie, he plays Ricky Walsh. He was actually also in the first Die Hard playing a young cop. He was in Hunt for October. So he's had a nice he had a nice career with McTiernan with some of the stuff that he
But no
did.
relation to Gregory
Then we
Peck,
have
I
Nick
assume,
Wynne.
right? Probably not.
No, I don't think so. And then you have Nick Wyman, who has also appeared on another season of the show because he was also in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Here in this movie, he plays Targo. And in the in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, he played the lawyer who wanted $75 for his taxi. And then the final solo credit that we get here is for Sam Phillips, who plays Katya, the mute female assassin in the
Right.
movie.
And I'm you probably talked about this throughout, but was it just that she was cheaper to not have any lines on screen, or did she not speak English? I wonder why they chose to not give her any lines.
Well, she's a singer. That's the irony of the
Huh.
whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
She's a singer who I was informed by one of my guests over the course of the show that the music from the TV show The Gilmore Girls was done by her.
Funny.
She composed the music for the show.
But I wonder though if there is a separate pay structure, if you have a line in a film versus not. But they did give her this.
Yeah,
Yeah.
there is. There
Yeah.
definitely is. There is. There is. There is.
Well, I don't think it
Yeah, but
detracted
I
in
think part of what.
role necessarily, but it was just an interesting choice.
Right. Correct. I think that the reason that they possibly didn't give her anything to say was because they wanted to. She has this scar on her neck. She must have been. She was wounded at some point over her terrorist career.
Oh, and so she couldn't speak because of that. I see.
That's what I think. Yes. And at the credits continue, and we get the casting director,
Pat
Pat Cole,
McCorkle.
CSA. Yes. So she also has a very prominent career. She was the casting director on 82 different movies and was just in the casting department in an
Wow.
additional 31 movies. So, she's still casting
Impressive.
today. Her most recent movie was from 2023 that she cast, and her career goes all the way back to the early 80s. So she's had a very long career. Most of the movies that I see on this list that she's done don't like jump out. She does have her three. Her three token McTiernan films because she did this one. She does Thomas Crown Affair and The 13th Warrior. It's funny that most of the oh and Rollerball, so she's got four. There you go. Basic is also his. So there you
Yeah.
go. She got five.
Casting is an interesting
So.
thing to do. I've had a chance to do casting for not for like anything, major, but I'm part of the SAG-AFTRA radio play committee. This is a union thing where we actually do live radio plays, and we will just take union members for this thing, and we'll go through the whole interview process. And if you direct it, then you get to cast your show. And so I've had a chance to do this on a number of occasions, and it's a fun process, where you are sitting in on all of the different auditions, and you've got your notes, and then you kind of put on the table all these headshots and kind of figure out who goes with what role. And I'll tell you, the most rewarding part of it all is when you get to call the actors and actresses who you're giving the roles to, and just hearing the joy from them. And hopefully you're going to get joy. I mean, if you don't, then it's kind of clear if you're going to go with them or not. But
Yeah.
really enjoyed that process. So, I mean, I can see how somebody who's in casting will want to stick with it for quite a while. It's pretty fun.
Right. Okay. Yeah, but you got to make these tough decisions sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, do I go with that? Do I go with that one? Do I, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you always have to keep that backup in case you need them.
Exactly.
yeah, cool. All right, then the credits continue, and the next credit that we get is for the costume designer, Joseph Olisi, who also has had a very long career. He has 77 movie credits on IMDb for costume designing. The latest one was in 2017, so he's probably, if not fully retired, semi-retired at this point.
Yeah.
But his credits go back even further than any of the others. It goes back to 1971. The first movie that he did the costume designing for was Shaft.
Ah.
Yeah.
And there's your Samuel L. Jackson.
There you go,
reference.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right. Good. Samuel. Excellent. Definitely. Then, you know, as we continue through the credits again, then we get Michael Kamen, mm-hmm. who we talked about before. Yep. And then I love the next one. It says Certain Original Characters by Roderick Thorpe.
Certain Original Characters.
What the hell does it mean, certain original characters? I mean, come on. Let's see if you know. How many characters in this movie are from Roderick Thorpe's original version of Die Hard?
Okay, so Roderick Thorpe was the one who wrote the original script then that was supposed to be for Lethal Weapon?
No. Roderick Thorpe wrote the original book, the novel that Die Hard was based on, called Nothing Lasts Forever.
Okay. So he's an author.
He's an author.
Okay.
Yes.
So basically McClane, right? And maybe the wife?
Okay. Okay. Anyone else?
I don't know. Maybe one of the cops.
Nope, absolutely no one else.
Just the two
of them, which is why it's really funny that it's a certain original characters. we got the two McClanes, that's it, or McClane and Gennaro.
I mean, I guess certain is better than just writing two original characters by Roger.
That's right.
Yeah.
It could have just been, you know, John McClane character by
right,
and the irony is in the original novel, the character's name is Joe Leland. Oh. It's not even John McClane.
So it's just the concept is based on that.
That's right.
Interesting.
That's right. And, you know, John, in the original story of Nothing Lasts Forever, Joe Leland is there with his daughter, who's the character of Holly. And she actually dies at the end of the movie, or at the end of the book.
Hmm.
So, you know, so she won't be back for that one, I guess.
Right.
Then the next credit we get is for the co-producers, David Willis and Carmine Zazora.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always fun to see the name of David Willis. Do you know who David Willis is?
Any relation to Bruce?
That would be a good guess that you would be correct about.
Mm-hmm. So what, his...
But do you know...
His brother or his father?
It is his brother.
Brother.
Yes. Yes. He is David Willis Jr.
Hmm.
His father is David Willis Sr. His father was actually in Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm.
He played the tow truck driver.
Oh, really?
Ah. You know, so when I saw now that it was David Willis, I was like, wow, his father's a producer. Hmm. But he was not. Right. And then the other producer listed here is Carmine Zazora.
It's a nice name.
Who only produced four different movies and was in six, has six acting credits also.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, let's go with his acting credits. He was in Die Hard 1. He played the character named Rivers.
Mm.
He was in Predator 2.
Mm.
He was in Hudson Hawk.
Mm-hmm.
He was in The Last Boy Scout, and then his final movie role was in 1996 in a movie called The Pterodactyl Woman from Beverly Hills.
Nice.
Yes. And his producing credits are all Bruce Willis movies. Uh-huh. You have The Last Boy Scout, Striking Distance, Color of Night, and Die Hard with a Vengeance. Mm.
I wonder if they referred to him as Zaz.
It does not say here what his...
I don't know. The last name seems to call for that.
Yeah, but there's a movie that came out last year in 2023 called The Hill, where he is credited as a partial writer. He's the source material for the movie was based on the works of, which is quite interesting to hear. You know, I mean, makes you wonder what it is that Carmine Zazora did, that where he got that information about it.
Yeah, don't know.
Yeah, but IMDb doesn't give us very much information about him besides that, except that his full name is Frank Carmine Zazora.
Ah.
And then we continue again with the credits here, and we get two executive producers, Buzz Feitschans and Robert Lawrence.
Ah, Buzz, like that as a first name. You don't see that too often.
Buzz? No, not at all. Not at all. And he has 20 producing credits. Mm-hmm. This is actually his second to last credit. Mm-hmm. His final credit was 2 years later, the movie Shadow Conspiracy. Mm. But he was a producer on Total Recall and this movie and Rambo Part Two, Red Dawn, First Blood, 1941, the Steven Spielberg John Belushi movie, Foxy Brown. Mm. Talking about Tarantino connections. Yeah, so he was producing stuff from the early 70s.
Nice.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is that if you on IMDb, so a lot of times it'll tell you if people have other connections in Hollywood. So his full name is Frederick Rollin Feitschans III.
Oh, wow.
Okay, he is the son of Fred R. Feitschans Jr. and the father of Buzz Feitschans IV.
There are four Buzzes?
There are four Buzz Feitschans.
Ah. Oh, right. Wow. There are four other Buzz Feitschans, huh?
Wow. Apparently.
I guess it's more common.
I wonder if that's right. To me, I can understand if people have the same name as their parents and stuff like that, but to give them the same nickname also is just a little too much.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting thing about IMDb. I remember getting on that service like right when it had started, and I went on as my basically my name that I had grown up with, which was Joshua Horowitz, and so I was number one on the list. Later on, when I went to change that to shorten it to just Josh Horowitz, suddenly I became like sixth or seventh on the list.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, you should have stuck with the Joshua.
I guess.
In order to be, more unique.
That's okay.
And they let you change it without a problem. That's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes I try change, sometimes I go and change things, and sometimes it helps and sometimes it doesn't.
Mm.
And sometimes they give me grief.
Yeah,
trying to do that.
Yeah, no, so. I went back and I remember doing that.
You are Josh Horowitz, the sixth.
Yeah, the sixth. Yeah, because they started letting you put on podcasting credits. So otherwise, my last credit would have been sometime in the mid 2000s. There was a film that I did as a kid that was actually brought back. And they took my footage from that and they put it in the motion picture film. That was a movie called Marilyn Hotchkiss Ballroom Dancing in Charm School.
Oh, wow.
But beyond that...
Yeah, you played Kenny Doolin. Wow.
Yes.
As Joshua Horowitz.
As Joshua Horowitz, that's right.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Very, very cool. Mm-hmm. Right, so we dealt with Buzz, and then now we get... The other one, Robert Lawrence, who is also, he produced 21 different movies during his career. The only one that really stands out for me is The Last Castle. Have you ever seen that?
Heard of it.
Robert Redford and James Gandolfini, directed by Rod Lurie.
I'm trying to remember if that was like, in my was opinion. That about presidents or something?
Or am I no, thinking it's about a else? General. It's about a general who goes to prison. He's like in a military.
Oh, right, right, right. Yes, and he like helps, like kind of, you know, they have like an uprising or something. Was that it?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. I think I have seen that one. It's been a long time though.
Yeah, came out in 2001. Mm. Yeah. And at this point, we are done with the single credits, mm-hmm. and then it just starts going through the cast.
Yeah.
You know.
Wow, you made it. You're through the film.
Yeah, exactly. And it goes through the cast all the way till we get to the final cast member who's listed on today's cast list is the character of Felix Little.
One of the bad guys?
Actually, no. Felix is the head of the Fed.
When they're in the car, and you know he's one of the people with the earpieces or whatever, and looking embarrassed.
No. The Federal Reserve. He's the guy.
Oh, was he the guy who tells them to like go into the elevator, and you know the guy with the little guy? He's kind of unaware. Yes, okay, that guy.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The
yeah.
little guy. That's the name.
That's right. And we sort of see a little bit of the next person on the list, Nils. Who's the guy that John shoots, who's in the cab of the truck.
Ah.
Yeah. Who played by Garrett Voorhees.
Ah, yes. R.I.P. Nils.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. And that's what we have now for this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to discuss here?
Well, not about the credits, but maybe we can talk a little bit about what could have been.
Okay, we can do that.
Yes, and I was surprised to hear about it too. I kind of did think that the ending could have been a little different, but it turns out they actually recorded a different ending, actually two, and you can see some of at least one of them. You can see on YouTube, or if you happen to have the special edition DVD.
Correct. So right, basically, it's I liked what they do there.
Mm.
You know, the overall idea is great because it, you know, they show that it, you know, John basically has to track down Simon months later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here it, in the ending in the movie, it literally is just a few hours afterwards that he's finally catching up with Simon. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that they show that John is a master detective and is able to, you know, go through, you know, finding clues in order to catch up with Simon.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds him in this like exclusive, I don't know, a men's club or something like that.
Right.
You know, there's no mention of Katya or anything like that. I don't know what really happens to her there, but, you know, John shows up and, he has this little conversation with Simon. And then they decide to play this very strange game,
mm-hmm.
By using a
double-sided Chinese rocket launcher, right?
No, it's a law missile.
Oh, is
that,
it?
Yes.
Okay.
And basically, you know, they keep twisting it, and each of them has to keep pushing the button until one of them, you know, it's sort of like a Princess Bride type of,
yes,
you know,
it's like a battle mental, of wits, but a lot.
That's right.
A mental, more explosive.
Yeah, well, John, you know, was able to build up an immunity.
Well, or he brought a flak jacket with him, I guess, right?
That's right.
Yeah, because the whole thing here is that he keeps asking him questions, you know, says this, he plays the Simon Says with him. But the final question is, because he gets them too, actually. Simon is able to solve some of the little riddles that he has.
Yes.
But yes, what did he forget to bring? And he had a good answer, actually, because he was drinking, you know, some sort of alcohol. And he's like, oh, yes, the antidote to that. He's like, wrong. Forgot well, to bring a flak jacket. Yeah.
That's right. Whatever. It's a nice ending. But it's also just, it's not, I only like the beginning part of it. I don't like the like I don't see John as the type of guy who would take a chance like this on a missile, because a flak jacket isn't really going to help you.
Yeah, probably not.
Not going to do much good.
Did you end up seeing the DVD commentary about this missing scene?
Yes, I did, but
Yeah.
I saw it months ago, so I
Because
don't recall everything on it. So if you
I
have
have a couple
anything.
of notes, because they had both versions, and you can hear commentary about this missing scene from screenwriter Jonathan Hensley. And
Okay.
he basically says that the ending wasn't used in the end because the studio execs thought that it showed a cruel, revenge-filled side to John. And they also thought that it wasn't action-filled enough, so they wanted to go ahead and reshoot it, and it cost them a lot of money, apparently, to do so. So
Understandably.
that's, they also talk a little bit about the second alternate ending, as part of the DVD commentary. And in that one, apparently John and Zeus, they actually float back to shore after the boat explodes. And then
Right.
Zeus ends up saying that it's a shame that the bad guys were going to get away, but John says he's not so sure. And then the scene shifts over to this other boat where the bad guys find that bomb, that Elephant Park briefcase, which
Right.
in the movie as we know it, they use that to blow up, I guess, the underground dam thing and get the water to rush
Yes.
through. But in this version, that doesn't happen. And then in a humorous little bit, Simon asks if anyone has a 4 gallon jug, and then boom, he is blow up. But they apparently thought this wasn't a good way to end it because it's too close to how it ends in Die Hard 2. So
Okay.
that was never actually filmed, but we can only think about how that one would be. I don't know if I like that one as much. I
No, I don't like that one either.
prefer how it ended. It's a little bit of a letdown maybe from what it could have been, but I don't know. I thought it was fine.
Right. Okay. Understandable. Okay. Thank you for discussing that alternate or those alternate endings with me.
Yes.
So Josh, do you have anything else you want to talk about this movie before we get into today's segment plus a bonus segment for you?
Yeah. Okay. I do have one more thing. I found out what the Rotten Tomatoes score was for this film, and I want to
Okay.
see if you think you know what it is.
I'm trying to remember it. I did discuss it in episode one here. If I remember correctly,
Ah.
it's like 59 or something like that.
Whoa, you got it right on the button. You
Wow.
know this film. Yeah, 59%. Though apparently CinemaScore gave the film an average of an A minus. And at the time, critics, they seemed to like Samuel Jackson's performance and the relationship between him and Bruce Willis.
Okay,
So
makes sense.
there you go.
That makes a lot of sense. All right.
Yeah.
Excellent. So today is Monday, so finally Josh gets a segment on the correct day. Oh, actually, on Friday you also had one. But okay, you have another segment that's on the right day.
Okay.
And every Monday we do a segment called McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan directed films. There's only You only have 11 to choose from, so it's relatively easier to decide. But
Yeah. And
why
it's
don't
easier
you?
still because I don't think I've seen all of them. So I'm going to mention the
There you
five
go.
that I remember actually seeing.
Perfect.
And Die Hard with a Vengeance. I'll put that one at five.
See, I'm glad that
And
I made you watch
there you
it.
go. Otherwise, this would have been a shorter list if I didn't watch this film.
That's
So,
right.
Pretty entertaining.
Yeah, I gotta
Let's
say,
see,
all
num.
season I've only had one guest who has not seen five McTiernan films, so that's pretty good.
Okay. All right. Number four, Last Action Hero. That was a fun one with Schwarzenegger and all the sort of tongue in cheeks to the whole genre. And it kind of makes sense that that would be a John McTiernan film because he had quite an experience making these types of films.
For sure.
So that one was fun. Interesting note, though, about Last Action Hero that kind of ties into some of the other podcasts that are out there. I've been listening to the Film Reroll podcast over the last couple of years, and that's one where they take a film and they make it a D&D campaign, essentially. They
Oh,
use
wow.
a Roll 20 system based on GURPS, which is this, you know, where you can take any scenario and basically make it into something like D&D. And so they did Last Action Hero for this one and just totally threw it off the rails, but it was just great. A lot of fun to listen to. They do it over like 3 or 4 different episodes. But be sure to, if you like this sort of thing, check them out. Yeah, Film Reroll for Last Action Hero. Anyway,
oh, well. Okay, cool.
Number 3 is Predator, another Schwarzenegger film, just full of action. Also, it's got two great characters in there. I love that Jesse Ventura is in there, as well as Carl Weathers, and just fun and sci-fi and campy and get to the choppa and all that. And, you know, a lot of explosions and editing, good stuff. Now we come down to number 2 and 1. So this was kind of close, but I'm gonna have to say number 2 is the first Die Hard. I still think that's the best of them. It has a kind of a different feel than the last 2 Die Hard movies that I've seen. I felt in that one that Bruce Willis's character is a lot more human. And when he gets cut and bleeds and limps, you really feel it. Like, you know, he could not make through it in that those sequences. It feels a little more that he's a superhero in 2 and 3. But you really get that feel with the character in the first Die Hard, and the setup is good. It's just fun to watch. So
okay,
that's number 2. And number 1 is The Hunt for Red October. Not necessarily everyone's top hit on that one, but I just really like that film. I like most submarine movies for that matter, but just the fact that you've got Sean Connery trying to do a Russian accent and just the different scenarios and the intrigue and the action, stuff like that, it's a great film. I remember reading the original book, too. That was a...
Tom Clancy.
Was it Tom? Yeah, the Clancy book. And for years, I used to think that Sean Connery's performance as a Russian submarine captain was great. I'm like, oh, wow, it sounds like that's what Russian sounds like. Wife, and I actually started learning how real Russian is spoken, and it's laughable just how heavily accented it is. I mean, if you think about it, a Scottish guy trying to do Russian is just funny. But at the time when I watched it, I thought it was cool. And a good movie, a lot of entertainment in that one. All so right. That's
very cool.
Yeah, there are others, but I haven't seen them. So there we go.
That is a great list. So thank you very much for those. Since Josh will not be with us on Thursday, we will do Thursday segment today also, which is Off the Beaten Track Revenge Edition, where my guest will give revenge or sibling rivalry, where my guest will give some sort of story anecdote. Adventure, misadventure, something has happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to either revenge or sibling rivalry. So, Josh, do you have a story for us?
This one was tough for me because, I mean, I have a brother, an older brother that, you know, we had our ups and downs from time to time, but we had a pretty good relationship overall. But I will mention, there was a time, this was back when my brother had gotten bar mitzvahed. So he was 13. This was actually in 1987. And we were taken on a trip to the East Coast. And
wait, didn't you get chicken pox then? Or something like that?
You remember it. Yes. Yes. That is correct. I was going to get to that. But on that trip, one of the first places that we ended up going was Boston, Massachusetts. And it was me, my brother, and our cousins who lived out there in Brookline. And I was with my younger cousin, and my brother was with the older cousin, and we were all supposed to be together on the Freedom Trail in downtown Boston. And my parents went away and did something else, and we were all told to stick together. I was 10 years old at the time. And my brother and other cousin decided to ditch us, as it was commonly called back then. We didn't freak out. I was with my cousin Mage, and we just kind of walked around, and you know, we were kind of asking around, you know, for parents and stuff, but we weren't really getting into it. But I guess we didn't end up finding our parents for at least a couple of hours, and they were freaking out, and they had called the police, and, you know, they were on the lookout for two lost boys and stuff. But all ended well in the end, and there were no real repercussions from any of it. But that was the trip where, yes, 2 weeks later, I ended up getting chicken pox, and I was stuck in a hotel room in Washington, D.C., where I got to watch Big Trouble in Little China endlessly on repeat. That was part of HBO in that hotel room, thus starting my path toward podcasting glory. Yes.
Yeah, that's excellent.
That is that story. So there we go. Sibling rivalry, maybe, but that's the closest I could come up with.
Did you ever get back at your brother for it? For ditching him?
No. I just ended up beating him a couple times when we would play RBI baseball on the NES. No, he'll never admit it.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. So, Josh, why don't you tell everyone for one final time this season where they can find Josh Horowitz?
One final time, you can find me at joshhorowitz.com. You can also find me on some of the podcasts I did in the past. That was 5 Minutes of Trouble, 5MinutesTrouble.com, or 5MinutesOfBonsai.com, as well as 12 Chimes It's Midnight. You can find that at 12ChimesRadio.com. These were podcasts I did many years ago. But still fun if you like Big Trouble in Little China, or you like Buckaroo Banzai or Old Time Radio. You can also find me on Audible.com. If you look up Josh Horowitz, and you'll find some of the audiobooks that I have done in the past. And that is about it for me. Thanks again for having me on and talking about a film I hadn't talked about before. It's a lot of fun.
Because you've never seen.
That's right.
And thanks to me, you have, and it's much appreciated.
Indeed. Yeah. Thanks a lot, Rob.
No problem. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So I will be back tomorrow with another new guest. And I want to once again thank Josh for joining me these last 4 days.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you.
All right. And until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Tony comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.